objections and public affairs committee to order and open a work session on Senate Bill 937. Can you give us an update, please, Janet?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 937 is a bill that affected the genetic privacy laws. It passed the Senate with a number of provisions. I believe there's a dash A4 that you replaced today that would delete the bill, replacing it with basically the main part of it is an advisory committee to look at genetic privacy laws and how they affect the study and use of genetic information and disclosure of that information. It charges the advisory committee with developing a legal framework defining the rights of individuals. The A4 amendments passed by membership and requires the Office of Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research to staff the committee. The substantive change, in addition to the committee, is to add a portion of language in the definition of anonymous research, and that's on page 1 of the amendment. This is to make it consistent with some research going on at Oregon Health Sciences. There is a letter at your place to be entered into the record from Bruce Bishop.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
My understanding is that the folks involved in this bill have met and agreed on the A4 amendment. Is that
your understanding?
Would you accept the motion to move the A4 amendment?
What I'd like to do first is ask them to come up, the proponents to the agreement, and just give us your thoughts on the record about the agreement and that you guys are have agreed. I know this has been a heavily negotiated bill with a very technical nature, and I want to let you to introduce yourselves to the record and just give us your thoughts on the A4.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, representing the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. We are in support of A4. It doesn't do everything that we would have liked it to do as the bill passed the Senate did, but we simply, frankly, ran out of time in terms of negotiating. We never reached impasse, but just ran out of time and realized the issue is more complex and requires more work than even the hours and hours we spent on it during this session. So we are happy to continue to study the issue and is supportive of the provision which will allow research to continue at Oregon Health Sciences University.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Kohler, representing Oregon Health Sciences University. I, too, would like to endorse the proposed Senate Bill 937 as amended. The amendments do allow for continuing outcome research of the kind that comes under the guidelines of the federal policy for protection of human subjects, and does allow not only the Oregon Health Sciences University but other academic institutions in Oregon to continue that kind of research. I agree that there is need for continuing study because some of the issues still need to be worked through, and I would also second the content of the letter that Bruce Bishop has submitted. It spells out in more detail what some of the remaining things are that need to be worked through.
That would be the A4 amendment you're speaking to.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association. We have agreed as well with the dash A4 amendments that it is a interim fix, a short-term fix for what is a very complicated issue. And among those issues that need to be addressed are subjects like how patients are informed on how their materials are used in research, where their genetic information goes or does not go, whether they have given authorization for subsequent use of that information, to they're aware of what is going on. We believe that next session we can come back with a much more comprehensive, balanced proposal for the legislature to consider through this task force. Therefore, with the sunset provisions contained in this bill to provide real teeth in our negotiations over the course of the interim, I believe we'll come back with a much better product than we saw from the Senate side. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Mr. Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gallant, in Section 1, Subsection B, or 1B, which is the one scientific and medical research conducted in accordance with federal policy for protecting human subjects, which is the provision that's being added, which actually would sunset also under this. Do you believe the safeguards in that policy would be satisfactory or equivalent to what we now have in state statutes to eliminate satisfaction?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, it is the best marker that we have at the moment. It is also used at OHSU and Kaiser currently. This also obviously affects private research as well as it's drafted. So as an interim step, we think it's adequate at the moment until we come back to the legislature with a more comprehensive proposal.
Thank you. Further question? Brittany Spar?
I move the desk for amendment.
Okay. Is there a motion before us to move the dash A4 amendments into Senate Bill 937? Is there any discussion? Representative Edwards, are we moving the dash A4 amendments into Senate Bill 937?
Sounds good.
Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Mr. Starr?
Is the Senate Bill 937
as amended to the floor of the House? Part of the motion for us to move Senate Bill 937 as amended to the floor of the House to a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Representative Matt.
Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased that there's some progress has been made as to an accommodation on this sensitive issue, and I'm particularly pleased that building on that progress, we'll see an opportunity for a comprehensive discussion in a less pressured atmosphere than during a legislative session, and I am confident that this process will give us a positive resolution of some of the pending issues, which are very sensitive issues, so I'll certainly be an eye vote.
I would add to that as you get into the waning days of the legislative session, that pressure increases significantly to find an agreement, and I think the agreement that is outlined here in the A4s will allow research to continue and an interim work group that can look into this in a little more relaxed manner and come up with some good recommendations for the next legislative assembly. Further discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. And Senate Bill 937 goes to the floor as amended. We do pass recommendation, and I think we will have Pastor Senator Williams who's been involved in this if you'd like to carry the bill. That's really that can. So that closes the work session on Senate Bill 937. We have just 2 5 seconds. We have 2 other bills on our agenda today. We have Senate Bill 558 and SGR 15. We're going to talk about the annual chef sessions aspect of SGR 15. But before we do that, let's jump into Senate Bill 558. And we have the bill. We've heard it a number of times. We have another set of amendments here.
These are for me, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Are they just being handed out now, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, they're
going to dash four.
Would you turn this to 55?
We're going to dash 45, Mr. Chair. Hey, Steve. If you want, can you describe this?
Yes, if you would, the impact upon the bill.
Yeah, this doesn't change anything with the speed limit itself. This addresses the penalty section of the bill, Section 4. And if you look at the current bill on page 2, beginning at line 31, and then the sub A, B, and C, you can see with present law, it goes up in increments of 10 for each traffic infraction. And when I looked at that, to me, if part of the argument to raising this is also to try to prohibit feeding above those ranges, then I think we should have the penalties be, in essence, tied more quickly to exceeding that limit. And what I've done here is added, so they would go up in increments of 5 miles an hour. So, for example, on line 32, if a person's exceeding 75 but not 80, it would be a Class C. And then it would go on. My concern is if you're going 95 miles an hour, it's a Class A. That seems extremely fast, whereas it would retain the current 85 miles an hour. So line 34 would be 80 to 85, and line C would be back to 85 miles an hour. So I guess my concern was we're increasing the speed limit, but I think if we're going to pass this, I think it gives us some argument to say we are also maintaining a penalty structure that will say you will be see a potential higher infraction if you go above that limit by greater than 5 miles an hour increments.
Thanks, sir.
Do you know what the penalties are for Class A, Class B traffic infractions?
Okay. I do not. I don't have that manual in front of me.
I've got them.
Do
you want to go to the
It's interesting to know if they're there.
While they're looking it up, as I understand the amendment, the speed bracket for each of these penalties will be down to 5 miles an hour.
Correct.
Which to me is getting a little too precise for highway conditions, where it seems to me a 10 mile per hour speed bracket is about the best you could do. So I'd have to be opposed to the amendment just because I think that it gets a little too tight in terms of bracketing.
Okay. It indicates here in the infractions, violations, and traffic offenses. Part of the ORS is the 153580, 153615. Class A penalty is $600. Class B is $300. Class C is $150. And Class D is $75. That's current
maximum
penalties. That's negotiated with the visit with the court in many instances, but those are the maximum.
Mr. Chair, members,
yes.
Those would not be the amount on the ticket. There's a uniform bail schedule. I don't have it with me, but we can get it. That's amount that would appear on the ticket.
It includes some other fees or tax on top, I believe.
Yes, you also start at less than the
amount. Okay. And then we also had the -2 amendment to the bill that were produced by Senator Miller. Okay. Can you refresh us on those -2?
Here, my understanding of the -2 is that they moved to the basic rule.
Maybe on that morning.
I think Randy, Senator Miller, when he first came and talked about it, when Mr. Moore was the staff, you have copies of the staff, didn't you?
He just turned it out and
Mr. Chair, in addition to repealing the federal maximum speed limit, which the original bill says, the -2s also repeal the maximum speed limit on interstate highways.
Basically establishes the basic rule.
And that 75, the new 75 would be kind of the evidence of violation of the basic rule.
Okay. I believe the way the statute reads currently, a prima facie evidence basic rule is the posted limit. And then if you exceed that, what this gives you is an arguable defense before a magistrate that the conditions were amenable to traveling faster than that.
Mr. Chair, in some areas of the choice of speed is a limit, and in other areas it's not. My understanding that this would take the places that are limits now and make them basic rules.
Okay, that's correct. I believe two-lane highways are basic rules technically, and the interstate system is a posted limit, which is a maximum.
Sure, I think there are some parts of the interstate that are basically basic rule and some parts currently that are maximum.
We have an officer here who could clarify some of this for us. Can you come forward, please?
Sure, my name is Bruce Hoffman. I'm a sergeant for the Arkansas State Police.
Yes, thank you very much. We've overheard some of our discussion here.
Yes. On the interstate system, anywhere where it's posted 55 is a violation of the basic rule. On the areas
where highways, two-lane highways primarily. Pardon me?
On the rural interstate portions of it where it's posted at 55, that would fall under the violation of the basic rule.
Mm-hmm.
The only place where the speed limit comes into play is where it's posted at 65. Okay. On the secondary roads, that all applies to violation of the basic rule.
Okay. All right.
Perhaps you can clarify, or the officer can clarify, Senator Miller's amendment, that if the interstate, would that be all the interstates in the state, and would that raise them all to the 75 and then basic rule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, you're talking about the Dash 2 amendments?
Yes. Have you seen those?
Yes, I have seen. I drafted those.
You drafted those?
I've seen a draft.
A draft. No,
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't take credit for that, no. What this, in effect, would do is it would remove those portions of the 65 speed limit now where it is the speed limit, and it would be a posted speed at that point. Which, as you said, where it's posted, the posted speed is prima facie evidence of violation of the basic speed rule.
What would be the speed that would be posted?
Under this bill, that would be based upon Department of Transportation engineering studies, and so it would be up to the Department of Transportation to make the determination. Then whatever speed they posted, that would be prima facie evidence of violation of the basic rule under the Dash 2 amendment. Under the bill as originally written, those would become speed limits.
Right, and the bill as written does not require that the Department of Transportation go out and arbitrarily post all rural sections of the interstate at 75 miles an hour.
That is my understanding.
It gives them the opportunity to, within their own judgment of what a safe and reasonable speed is on that section of highway, to post as high as 75.
That's my understanding, Mr. Chair. The Department of Transportation would probably be in a better position to answer that question specifically.
Any questions from the committee?
I'd like to ask some of those questions. The Dash 4, I don't know if you heard the conversation about the penalty structure. Do you know the history of why these were increments of 10 miles an hour in this infraction? schedule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, no, I don't know that. I've been on the department 20 years, and it's always been that way.
Go ahead, Representative. If we were to narrow it down to 5-mile-an-hour increments, given that we're raising the speed limit substantially here, I guess my concern, once the red flag I saw was going to 95 miles an hour, many cars, it'd be pretty dangerous for them to even go that fast. And yet it's Class A, whereas it's 85 now. Do you feel like that would be unfair to drivers that we have narrowed that window? I mean, do people float around 5 miles an hour? That's just, in your profession, is 5 miles an hour reasonable, or does it need to give people 10 miles an hour latitude to go over the speed limit?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, in the case, if you're using radar or VASCAR, electronic device like that, you can pinpoint the speed to a specific mile per hour, in which case you might be at 73, 74, whatever. Typically, if the police officer is chasing the vehicle, trying to get down to that section would be somewhat arbitrary. So as a matter of practice, a pace speed would be put at 5 mile per hour increments. So that might be cutting the margin fairly thin. One of the concerns that we have, of course, with the violation of the basic rule is that in order to build a case, all judges would interpret that rule differently, even though it does say that it's prima facie evidence of violation. Sometimes that's subject to interpretation in different courts around the state. And so, as a result, those higher speeds do become a problem where the speeds, the margin, if you will, is extended out some. It kind of makes a gray line for the speed, is what I'm saying.
One last question, and one of the comment you just made. What is this pacing? What are you talking about here? Just following?
Yes. In a nutshell, that's it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Good man.
I'd be curious about your reaction from, based on your expertise, to the argument I've received from a number of folks who are truckers saying that there's a problem with having a differential maximum speed between trucks and cars and automobiles based on the idea that those differentials themselves can create potential for problems on the highway.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, that is one of the concerns. There have been studies that have been conducted on that. There was a study that was conducted back in the 50s or 60s that showed that speed differential was the major concern. There were further reports that came out later on that said that there were flaws in that because it included people running into the back of stopped vehicles, which, of course, the speed differential would be the only problem there. More recent studies have shown that speed differential is a problem. I do know that when this bill was heard in Senate Transportation, the Oregon Trucking Association came out with a statement that if the differential was more than a 10% difference, that they would be in opposition to the bill. I don't know what their standpoint is, and I don't know if they have appeared before this committee or not.
Thank you.
That may be a thing. This is the third time we've had it up on the agenda. No, it was from the truck. Further questions from the committee?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Can you
I'm curious to know if the office would share with the county that the judges don't like to use prima facie evidence so we would know in the future.
Thank you, Representative Byer.
Just had one quick second.
Yes, sir.
On pacing, we were talking about that earlier. Is there a particular time frame that you have to pace a car before you issue a ticket? Is there a rule or common practice within the department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garden, no, there isn't.
So just for a matter of a few seconds is perfectly adequate? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, that's a complicated question. It sounded like a simple question, but it's a little more complicated to answer than that. It depends on the conditions. Obviously, during daylight hours, if someone sees a police car right behind them, they're not going to continue speeding. So in the daytime, you would use farther distance away, and you would use markers as you were going past, like
As you pass under an underpass, you would check it against your speedometer, against your odometer, to maintain that constant distance. So in those circumstances, the pace itself would take longer. At nighttime, when all you can see is headlights, in that case, you could get right behind someone, and within a relatively short period of time, you could tell what speed they were traveling at. So it varies depending on the circumstances.
Thank you very much. Before you leave, any further questions?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Do you have any other thoughts on my colleagues here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Teflon, yes, oftentimes people ask me how to take care of tickets that they get, and my advice to them is always just to pay it.
That's the advice you don't see.
Thank you. Senator Miller, did you want to, you have any words for us this morning? We do have the DAS 3s here also, and they are somewhat similar to the DAS 2s. I don't know what the origin of the DAS 3s were.
Let's share how DAS 3 is.
Good luck.
Okay.
Pardon me? Are they yours, Mr. Chair?
No. They might have been working for the ANSI. If you have some interest in this also. I think what we will do is stand at ease for a moment. And get in the sense of some of the members of the committee are.
Chairman,
Representative Manning.
I move that we suspend the rules for purposes of adopting a conceptual amendment to the 10055.
And what would be the nature of that amendment?
The nature of the amendment would be to change the maximum speed limit for trucks, which is shown at 65 miles an hour on rural interstate highways, to 70.
Okay. We have a motion, colleagues, to suspend the rule for purposes of amending the bill on line 12, page 1. You know, this is where it might say the same language in the bill.
If we're allowed to suspend the rules, the purpose of the amendment would be to have only a 5-mile-an-hour differential between trucks and cars.
Okay. Is there any objection to that motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Devlin.
This is the one exception I'll give you. I won't object.
Don't object. So hearing none, the order will be suspended, and the motion is to, on line 12, change 65 to 70.
Is it all
in other directions, where it may indicate the
Speaker? I move the dash 4 under Senate Bill 558.
Oh, can we finish the second motion first?
Can we adopt it?
No, not yet.
We weren't quite done. Okay. We did suspend the rules.
I thought we just
but we didn't adopt the change yet. So,
my motion, Mr. Chairman, is that we change the maximum speed for trucks in the bill from 65 to 70, where it's 65, we move it to 70. And that the differential be adjusted throughout so that the differential between trucks and cars is 5 miles an hour instead of 10.
That's appropriate. Safety factor there, keep traffic moving all along at about the same speed. So. Is there any objection to that motion?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. We better have a clerk please call the roll.
Representative Fire.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
No.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Gardner.
Aye.
Representative Manning.
Aye.
Representative Starr.
Aye.
Chair Simmons.
Aye. The motion carries. The bill is conceptually amended. Yes, Mr. Devlin.
Move the dash 4s into Senate Bill 558.
Is there a motion to move the dash 4s into Senate Bill 558? And as we discussed earlier, those tighten up the fine schedule from 10-mile-an-hour brackets to 5-mile-an-hour brackets. Please call the roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Edwards, I understand where your intent, but I think that after the definition officer was out, that 5 miles per hour maybe is a little too tight for enforcement purposes, I'm afraid that I have to not support that motion because of that issue. I'm afraid that, or I understand what you want to do is try to put stiffer penalties with the higher speed. I'm afraid that's not the way to do it.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Representative Fire. It might be that at some point we may want to have a supplemental penalty for exceeding, say, 100 miles an hour. Although I say at some point, too, one gets into reckless driving anyway, and there are other penalties out there. Because just based on conditions, it won't just be the speed at that point. The speed itself will be so reckless given conditions. But I suppose, theoretically, one might have a five-mile stretch of open highway, vision unimpeded, no vehicles in sight, where you're doing 100 miles an hour, and it deserves a Class A infraction, but it might not quite be reckless. In any event, there is a recklessness factor that's available if there's traffic and there's danger. So I understand and respect what Representative Edwards wants to do, but I think that time frame for the miles per hour frame is too narrow.
I would tend to concur with that sentiment. And further discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Fire?
No.
Representative Devlin?
Yes.
Representative Edwards?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Representative Manning?
No.
Representative Starr?
No.
Chair Kinney?
No. And the motion having not received the required majority is carried. Representative
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 558 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Calls of motion for us to move Senate Bill 558 as amended to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, please call roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
No.
Representative Denver.
Aye.
Representative Gardner.
Aye.
Representative May.
Aye.
Representative Starr.
Aye.
Chair Kinney.
Aye. And Senate Bill 558 is amended goes before the House to do pass recommendation. I was trying to do myself. We're closing the work session on Senate Bill 558, and we're going now to a public hearing. We posted for work session, but we want to discuss the potential annual session aspect. So, both they are 15. We have the A6 amendments that do something significantly different. We'll open that work session on SCR 15, and Senator Moore, were you did you care to comment on that one here today at the annual session? Day 6 is a brand new bill. We are not discussing the merits of the A6 amendments today. What we're going to discuss is the merits of the original bill as passed out of the Senate and.
Okay. Just waiting to stop this thing.
There we go.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the record. State Senator Randy Miller of District 13, here to support Senate Joint Resolution 15 in the form that has passed the Senate. That bill, as you know, would cause us to meet in annual sessions for the odd numbered year not to exceed 120 calendar days, even year 50 days, that total being probably less than we will achieve this year.
No doubt.
In our undefined biennial session, undefined in terms of length. It, I think, also would add purpose to the interims we now have that, in my view, and having been here a few sessions, are just a bit above meaningless, in that we develop a lot of reports, a lot of proposals that are then deposited to a lot of brand new people who rightfully want to do it from the start. So this, in my view, adds continuity in terms of having members who would at least work in the interim for a short session where they might then act on the interim product. The reason in this bill that we did not specify particular subject matter, which is done by some for the second short session, is being exclusively budgetary, I would ask you not to go that direction if that is the interest of some, simply because from time to time we may discover that something we pass, even during this session, 6 months from now, a year from now, perhaps the citizens may think it was unwise. And we would be bound by the terms of the second session if it was budgetary only, and not to be able to change that. And I think that's an undue restriction. Time itself will be the true restriction as to what bills we could deal with in a short session. In order to make sure that these session dates and the limitations meant something, and that we just didn't then slide into a special session or extend, the extensions are for 5-day increments and would require a 2/3 vote of both houses. I think most of you realize that perhaps the leadership could prevail upon members to extend for 1 5-day increment if there were some big item being negotiated in a few more hours, at least it would be represented that way, were needed to close the deal. Well, I think the impatience of both minority and majority parties at the end of that 5 days would be such that you wouldn't have a subsequent 5 days. Originally in the Senate, we had a provision that said that to make doubly sure there was no interest in extending, that per diem would end at the end of the 120 and at the end of the 50. In somewhat of a concession to the Senate minority leader, I agreed to change that and allow per diem to be paid the first 5 days, but not any time thereafter. If you all care to change that back to the original language, wouldn't particularly bother me. I just wanted to indicate what the concerns was were from the Senate minority leader. I'd be happy to turn this over to my colleague and co-sponsor, Representative Edwards, and answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, state representative from House District 15, representing portions of Southeast and Northeast Portland. I have actually spent a lot of the interim thinking about why we should go to annual sessions, and in fact, last session we came very close at the very end of session of passing annual sessions, and I really firmly believe it's time for us to move in this direction. There's only a handful of states left in the country that only meet biannually or don't meet annually. I think this process deserves annual sessions. I think the continuity, if nothing else, would be the greatest asset from going to annual sessions. I think, in all fairness, the interim has become less productive. This would make sure that we have a productive session between the two election cycles. And I think, you know, given term limits, depending on the state of that measure that we have, I think this, in addition, would complement our work here, and that is, there would be continuity in leadership, regardless of party. Right now, with both chambers, well, at least on our side, we will have a new speaker, regardless of the party. And I think that makes it even more difficult to lead us as a group. I think our budget situations are complicated enough that annual sessions would also give the full body the ability to consider either legislation or budgetary matters that might arise in that two-year period. Right now we have an e-board set up. I think the state of that would be an interesting one if we went to annual sessions. That personally has always been a little troubling, that a small group of representatives here, and that's not a partisan because the pendulum swings, basically make some budgetary decisions. We give them a set amount of money to make some policy decisions, and it's not the full amount, complement of the body. I think annual sessions might provide less need of an emergency board at all. Furthermore, you might see less special sessions. Of course, since I've been here, I haven't had one yet, but I know that's been sort of the past, and a lot of reasons for those have been either we haven't been able to address a certain issue after adjournment is brought back to us, whether it be an economic or a policy issue. I just feel that there are lots of benefits to this. I don't feel that this makes us a professional legislature. I just think it enhances our ability to do the people's work. There will be arguments that we will be going down the path of becoming a professional legislature. As is outlined in this bill, quite frankly, we will meet less than we meet today, obviously, and in the future. I think if you look historically, we're going to pare this down, and I think one of the arguments is this will be a cheaper way to go for state. And the per diem piece, you know, we can argue whether that's smart or not. I think, quite frankly, we should have an end date. If we want this to pass, we got to guarantee the people that we are willing to either, if we're going to continue, that we will have to make some personal sacrifices to do that. I know that was kind of a rub last session, but I think if we're going to get this passed, we got to have an end date. This passed out of the Senate 22-7, bipartisan support and bipartisan opposition. So this isn't going to cut party line. I think it's your personal philosophy about how we conduct our business here. I do hope we can go into work, move this bill out, and then have the full floor debate and pass this thing, because I do think it's the right thing for the state, and in the long run will serve us well if we can get it passed by the voters.
This is Scar in the next thing.
Thank you. I've got an alternate proposal. Recognize the issues that we're trying to deal with in this bill, and what would you think, though, would you consider changing the way we operate now, come in January or February and have an organizational meeting where committees get assigned and then reset the legislation, allow committees to work through the spring and summer, and then reconvene, you know, in September and work the legislative process through the fall, and we have kind of a automatic ending date around Christmas time so people want to get out of here and back to their families. It seems to me that that would accomplish what you're trying to accomplish here, but still we'd meet on a biannual basis, and it also would allow new legislators time to work issues in an interim, you know, pre-interim basis, where we could, you know, we'd have bills that were pre-session filed that could be worked, issues could be worked, you know, the legislative agenda set in that, say, 6 to 8 month, you know, period of time, those issues could be hashed out, and I think that at that point, newly elected legislators would have, you know, a better handle of the process and the ability to deal with the issues. Would you care to comment on that?
That, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Vice Chairman, is a more radical departure than certainly this bill suggests. If I understand your proposal, you would come in here, you would do your organization, you would then dismiss, adjourn, and come back, and then end around the end of that first year?
Yeah, you'd have a...
Would there be a subsequent session?
It would be like a legislative... You have an organizational meeting where we elect leadership, committees, interim, pre-interim committees to be appointed, where we could work legislation, deal with issues, have a bill in the pipeline, really, so that when we convened in a recess, for a recess period of 6 to 8 months, we could reconvene the day after Labor Day, September, and start working on bills and new legislation and budget through this process.
Well, I would just say that's certainly a fair proposal. I'm more comfortable with the proposal contained within the current Senate Joint Resolution 15. In that we delay the opening until February. Most people who have just gone through a campaign season are kind of energized by a few issues anyway, probably have spent some time. I think the additional month allows time for organization, certainly, and a reasonable amount of preparation. This isn't here to suggest that the work of the legislature in the current form has been all that bad. What it says is it could be better. And I don't see the need for such a dramatic change. All I'm trying to achieve by this is that I think we would have a better work product and probably be able to take some corrective action in the subsequent session, as Representative Edwards has testified, to have more input with budgetary matters that I think would be beneficial to this state. And I think the definitions contained within the dates here allow someone to come in, serve 4 months, and they are involved in interim. But I think there would probably be more of a required commitment under the design you have proposed and be more disruptive to citizen legislators, in my view, than this proposal.
Could I just add, because I know that proposal has been floating around there, and I think my only concern about that, I think it sounds good on paper, and I'm not to criticize the idea, but if you think about it,
you're just creating an interim before the session, and I don't know what the pressure is for those interim committees to really, and maybe you could change that, but to really work towards some end towards the session. I think the pressure of the session, having us all in here together, helps drive the process so that you can have, you know, bills go through. I mean, and I've heard this structure. I guess I'm not as convinced. I think by breaking up the two sessions, you're going to get a lot more productivity, perhaps, than that alternative. So that's just my personal opinion.
This is Matt. I have some questions also. And also, we have a four session starting pretty soon, gentlemen, so we need to try to get our questions in here.
I'll try to make this brief. First of all, with due respect to Representative Starr, I'd have to strongly oppose an alternative proposal along those lines. First of all, I'm a convert to the cause of annual sessions. I started out in January of 89 being totally opposed, but observation and experience have brought me around, and term limits has been a factor. Another factor has been the length of sessions that we are in. What I like about Senate Joint Resolution 15 is the precision of the time frames, which will bring about discipline in the legislative process. But, for instance, the alternative proposal concerns me because I think when people are elected, they have a certain amount of enthusiasm to get certain things done. And waiting till September, I think, dampens that enthusiasm. It also would require that we completely rethink the budgetary format where we anticipate a new biennium on July 1. We'd have to rewrite that if we're coming in September. I also see that when there are initiatives that pass that have some impact, often the legislature meets soon enough than to do some fixes or implementation work on initiatives that come up every 2 years. As to this particular proposal, I just want to say and welcome your remarks, but I'm convinced a little extra gestation time into February is good because it allows those new enthusiastic people to gather their thoughts a little more. Secondly, a firm deadline, I think, actually helps the citizen legislature. My biggest problem this year is not knowing when I can go down the street full time and having to constantly put off my clients who thought maybe I'd be back at the beginning of July. I don't know if it'll be mid-July or the end of July. I would much rather say it's highly likely I'm going in on this date and out on that date, and the trade-off is I know the next year I'm going in for 60 days. I didn't used to say that, but after I've been through this experience now of the indecision about when we're going to wrap up, for whatever reasons, it doesn't go away. I also like the stronger interim. With term limits, yet some people that are supposedly term limits still have one more shot coming back. The brand new people coming in have a chance to get their feet wet, develop some new ideas, and then have some time, knowing they're going to come back that next April to get some good things done. And I've just had some ideas presented to me this morning by a freshman representative that are good ideas, but gee, this is July too. And there's no way we can develop them intelligently, I think, in the next few days. Why wait 2 more years? So I guess I'm more than a question. I'm simply complimenting you, gentlemen, on what I think is precisely the right answer. I also want it being set for the next primary election. I think this resolution is great as is, and I commend you both for coming up for it. So I guess that wasn't a question. I feel a lot better.
Thank you. That would make your day.
One observation I would make, and be glad to have your input on this, the reason that I selected 50 calendar days in the second session was to try to accommodate people, such as the chairman, who come here from a long distance and need to find a place to stay. And I wanted to make sure that the apartment rent didn't push into a third month. And if we'd had 60 days, it's possible if you get a five-day extension, I'm sure, of course, your landlord would be very understanding. It would probably require you to stay another 30 days. That having been said, realizing that February is a short month, if you all wanted to further reduce the time period here and make that 115, I certainly wouldn't have any problems with that. And trying to, again, one of the difficulties we had in the Senate was simply those people who do come from some distance and are so uprooted and inconvenienced that trying to, in this measure, think of them.
Senator Moore, my understanding is the bills would stay active for the entire two-year cycle, and the interim committees that met after the first session continue to work bills and have work sessions, and you would develop then a backlog or a list of bills to raise to go into on the floor of the House or Senate once you got back into that second session. Is that how you envision this working?
That's how I envision.
And the budget would still be through your budget cycle?
Yes.
I think those are the details that would be worked out. You know, this is just to set up the framework, and you could set up a interim committee this session. It seemed like that would be appropriate to try to, if they were anticipated after this were to pass in May, to address how specifically, but I believe that's at least our intent was to set it up that way.
Also comment, as you may know, this proposal, and offered a similar proposal that was on the ballot in 1990, I believe it was, and it failed by 5,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
And the antagonist described it as moving to a professional legislature, which of course it didn't. And I will not try to fool anybody. It won't be a huge campaign to go out and sell what most of us think is a process issue. Probably its success or failure will depend a lot about what we say in different forums, as well as what editorial support might be generated. I think it will be there. I just frankly think it's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make statements that I support the bill as drafted. It may need some modest amendments, and obviously we'll need some work should it ever be implemented in terms of what the internal processes will have to be within this building. I would just hope that if we can get it to the floor, and I hope we could get it to the floor, I understand that those personal convenience issues are important. I understand it's easier for some of us to serve here than others, particularly given our distances from our districts, to say them. But most of the debate when this got on the floor of the House in the last session at about 4 a.m. was centered all around how can I get an apartment for 2 months? How can I get a staff for a few months? And very little of the debate was on what the overall public policy implications of it were. And I think that's where you have the pluses in the process, and I hope that we can get this to the floor, that most of the debate now is about the policy implications and less about the convenience issues, knowing that those are still important and still have impacts on people, but there are, I think, some significant policy implications. Some of the legislation we deal with, I think Representative Mannix commented on it, some of it's so complex that it's very hard to deal with in even one session's time. And what we have now is fairly rapid transitions of who's here over sessions to sessions. So the ability to work on legislation over an interim and bring it into another session would be very beneficial. I would hope that we'd get an opportunity to vote on this.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, case in point, I think the bill was just passed two bills ago just this morning about interim study on genetic R&D. I mean, I think those are extremely complex. It's come to us at the end of session, so we're going to punt it to an interim group to then wait for 2 more years. I mean, quite frankly, if you had a second session, we could address it then.
And a third of the House members who will see that will have never
seen it. That's a great case study.
Mr. Chairman, I would welcome the opportunity to simply send this bill to the floor as is.
A little bit of a logistics problem that I would have been saying to the
Okay.
It is. And we have a fourth session that is awaiting us. So what we're going to do is close the work session and close the public hearing. Oh, well, we didn't have a public hearing on that, but what we need to do is adjourn and take a few more.
Thank you.